chicharrón, papa, frijol, pastor.
Los caballeros se merecen al aeropuerto de la Ciudad de México.
Pásale, buena, pásale.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Pásale, buena, pásale.
Chicharrón, papa, frijol, pastor.
Hi everyone, welcome to the second episode of my podcast Mexico Underground. I hope that all of you are fine, healthy, and locked down. This is an episode that I'm really looking forward to because it's food related. And for some people you may know, but I have been in the food industry since I'm 15 years old, so it has been a while. But also a few times since I'm not inside of a kitchen, because on the past 6 years I have been more involved in the food tourism industry, and being inside of a kitchen is something that I miss a lot because of the sense of community that is there. Something common that people ask me when I'm on my tours is what else is good besides Mexican food in Mexico? I say that we have great Korean food, good Indian, terrible Chinese, and pizza. A few years back, pizza was not even on the map, I think. It was only something that you will get on chains, no? Like Domino's, Pizza Hut, Benedetti's, and other places that I don't think that they exist anymore. But it was a little bit after, when the restaurants started to pop up, that we had better pizza places. So this next interview is with my friend Paul. He is from Chicago originally, and he used to have a restaurant over there called Quixote. Apparently it was very famous in Chicago. But I have to confess that I haven't been to Chicago, and I really want to go to explore the food scene over there. But also, it's a city that I feel that I will fall in love with because it has my top three favorite things, which are architecture, good food, and comedy. Talking about comedy, on this next Thursday, 16th of April, I will have an Instagram live comedy show on the Instagram of Pinche Bar. The link is in the description. If you follow me or follow them, you will see the Instagram live show at 6 p.m. on Mexico City time. Also, there will be other comedians. So I feel that right now it's a moment that we have to support the small businesses, the small restaurants, the small grocery stores, everything that is near your house. I already did my part with the restaurant of my friend, Dr. Pizza. I ordered pizza last week and I was very happy because for 2 days I didn't have to cook, which I love cooking, but under these circumstances that it's pretty much something that I must do, I don't enjoy it that much. So take a listen to the interview. I hope that you enjoy it. And also I hope that you can try their pizza soon. They are still working on delivery and also for a takeaway. So I think that I will always have trouble saying your last name, Fiasco.
No, that's it. It's Fiasco, yeah.
Yeah? How are you, Paul?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. And I've always been a fan of your podcast and all these interesting projects you do. So it's super cool to be able to participate.
Great. Thanks. I'm flattered by that. And well, I have to confess that I'm a huge fan of your pizza. Paul has a very cool project called Dr. Pizza, which it's very new.
Yeah, it's about 8 months old now. We opened in December of 2018. And just towards the end of December, early January, was kind of the soft opening, official opening. And right now, we're right in the summer of 2019. And I feel like we've kind of finally caught our stride and our groove. And things are going well. So it's really been a exciting project. It's kind of funny. It's something that we've been talking about doing for a few years. My partner and I, Ricardo Franco, he's a restaurateur here in Mexico City. And I had met him through my girlfriend, Polly Jimenez, funny enough, on Instagram.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
They knew?
They were friends just from here living in Mexico City for a long time. I think they've known each other for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then I had a restaurant in Chicago a few years ago. And when I first started dating Polly, I don't even know how I got introduced to this guy, Ricardo, and just on Instagram. So we started talking. You know, I would see pictures of his restaurant, Parker and Lennox here, which is a jazz bar, and they also have really good food. And we would joke around and, you know, just talk about what it's like running restaurants in these two different cities. And yeah. I think he must have saw that I was always posting pictures of pizzas on my Instagram because I didn't have a pizza restaurant in Chicago, but for, you know, maybe 10 or more years, I've just been making pizzas as a hobby. And I would do pizza nights for friends, and it was just something for fun. And I think one day he's like, you know, we should do a pizza place in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And this was two years ago at least. And we would say, oh yeah, that would be cool, like joking around. And yeah. You know, a few chances of fate, I moved to Mexico, and you know, we said, hey, do you wanna meet? Yeah. For the first time in person, which was funny. And
Everything was in Instagram or texting, email?
Texting, Instagram. Okay. No, it wasn't that serious. And then we decided to actually meet up. He had been living in New York a lot of the past year or two, and he had just gotten back. And funny enough, we met at Pizza Felix, which is another great pizzeria here in Roma. And partially it was to see, like, you know, this is supposed to be the good pizza right now, and also to meet and talk. And, you know, we tried a bunch of pizzas and got to know each other. And
that sounds fun.
It was fun. It was super cool. And it wasn't that serious of a meeting. And then I think by the end of it, you know, we kind of talked about doing the pizzeria, but it was more of get to know each other. And then started texting more and, you know, oh, hey, maybe we should meet up again. And, mm-hmm. you know, think this might actually be something serious. And then you know, here we are a year or so later.
So you did that pizza scouting, and then you realize Mexico City doesn't know how to eat pizza. I have to show them. Or what happened?
No, I would never say that, but there is good pizza. I think there are some really good places, but I think before I moved here, I used to come maybe once a month, once every 2 months to visit my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. We were doing this long distance thing, and
that's hard, man.
It was hard, but thankfully she has kind of a flexible schedule because she has her own illustration studio, so she would come and stay for longer periods of time. So it was pretty good, but we would you know, always go out to eat and this and that, and I would kind of joke, oh my god, like we should there needs to be some good pizza here.
Yeah.
And years later, 2 years later, 3 years later, here we are, and you know, we open up Dr. Pizza, and all of a sudden, there are a lot of other good pizza places opening up. You know, you see the magazines now, like pizza, it's pizza time, things like that.
Yeah, it's like you created the trend of pizza now.
I don't think we created it, but I think we're right in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And it's cool. I think it's great. And we love to go to other places. You know, this Aiko just opened up from the Kobayashi Group, which has Rokai and those.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like a Japanese style pizza.
Have you been already?
I haven't been, but I know Ricardo has been once or twice, and we might even be going today. We try to go maybe once a month or every few weeks to try you know, these new spots that are opening, and because everyone does things like a little bit differently. Like those guys have this Japanese thing going on. Pizza Felix, they have more of a, I would say, a traditional Neapolitan pizza, kind of a knife and fork type thing. It's like a little bit more of like what you would find in Naples. And I would say with us, we were trying to do more of a pizza you would find in the States, Chicago or New York.
Mm-hmm.
That it is in the style of Neapolitan. Like we do a 48-hour fermentation of the dough. Okay. We have San Marzano tomatoes. We only use fresh mozzarella. But the way that we make the dough, we want you to be able to hold it in your hand and eat it. We don't want it to be, you know, a fork and knife type thing, because it's a fun place. It's a place come with friends. You know, we have good beer, good wine, and I don't want it to be, you know, quote unquote fancy or have that vibe. So we wanted to go for the eat it with your hands style, but also kind of traditional in that we use these styles of the Neapolitan pizza.
Okay. I remember this New Year, I spent it in New York City. And actually, my dinner on the night on the 31st of December was Joe's Pizza. It was very good, actually. I was surprised. Because when I was cooking, until I make my own pizza, I was like, pizza can be good. No, it's not only Domino's, it's only, I don't know if you have seen, but we have a lot of those. They have decreased on that, actually. We used to have an Italianis pizza restaurant. So for me, pizza was not like, meh.
Mm-hmm.
But then for me, when I tried that one in New York, and then pretty much 1 week after I came from my holidays, I went to Dr. Pizza and I was like, well, we have very decent pizza now that I just tried, the one that everybody says in New York that you have to try, that's a must. I tried many. I tried Roberta. I tried that one, Joe in Bleecker Street. They were pretty good, but that one, I think that it's very competitive. Your pizza is very good to that standard.
No, I appreciate that. And then we put a lot of time into trials and tests of the, mostly of the dough. Mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons why, you know, it's funny, a few years ago when I even brought up this idea of opening Pizza Place Mexico, some chefs that I know are like, you know, I don't think you can do good dough because of the elevation, because of,
okay,
I don't know, all of these things. And when we decided we were going to open this, I turned my kitchen pretty much into a test lab for maybe 2 months. And we were trying to figure out what...
So that means a lot of pizza for eating every week?
Yeah, that was a fat period of life. And Polly was eating a lot of pizza. Ricardo was coming over. We're trying all these different... one, different flours, and then two, you know, there's a lot of, it's funny, it's very simple. It's flour, water, yeast, and salt. That's it, four things, but the
magic is the
magic is the times, the temperatures of the air, the water, the ratios, all of those tiny different things can really change a lot because the dough's alive, you know?
Yeah.
So what you're doing is you're feeding it the yeast. The salt has an impact, how much water it has an impact, and how warm the air is where it's, you know, breathing, living, that also matters. So we were talking about trying to maybe import flour from Italy and this and that.
Really? That worst is about
flour? Well, no, a lot of places do that. A lot of places here even do that. In places in Chicago that I know do that. We said, you know, I don't like the idea of having to do that, putting it on an airplane, whatever.
Yeah.
So we're like, you know what? Let's try a bunch of Mexican flours. We got, I think, 8 different varieties, did all the tests, and we're like, this is incredible. Why would we not use this?
Okay.
So,
okay. Found good ones.
Yeah, we found great flour here. And the only thing that we do import are the tomatoes, San Marzano tomatoes.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a...
Which are usually canned, those?
Yeah, they're canned. It's like a whole peeled tomato comes in the can.
That flavor is amazing.
The flavor is amazing. And I think that's kind of an example of the pizza we're doing. The sauce is literally just those tomatoes and a little bit of salt, not cooked, nothing. That's it.
Oh, wow. That's it.
And if you, you can taste it. There's nothing to hide. You want to taste this tomato, one of the best tomatoes in the world. You know, you have the dough, the tomato, and then fresh mozzarella cheese. That's it. There's not a lot of tricks going on, and I think that's why I love pizza. It's so simple. But
and why is the doctor pizza? Why? Who's curating or what? Is someone sick there?
We're bringing the good health to the people.
Okay.
I don't know. It was kind of a funny thing. We were talking about a bunch of different names, and Ricardo came up one day randomly, like, what do you think of Dr. Pizza? And I think it was random how he came up with it. And like, we were thinking of some Italian names. We were thinking of all these different things. And I'm like, I don't know.
What about the other ones? Which one, if that's Ricardo's idea, which ones were your idea?
I didn't have, my ideas were bad. He had a few good ideas. One, he wanted...
Well, share the bad ideas.
He wanted to call it, he wanted to name it after the town where my the Italian side of my family is from.
Okay.
Which was cool.
You have it in your blood.
Yeah, my
Biasco is Italian.
Biasco's Italian, yeah. Uh-huh. My dad's side of the family, like my great grandpa from my dad's side of the family is from Italy.
Okay.
And a small town, like an hour or two outside of Naples, which is where pizza really comes from. So it feels cool to kind of do this full circle thing.
Yeah. So that's why you wanted to like do pizza, because of your family, or someone teach you in your family to do pizza?
I think one of the biggest things that inspired, I guess is the word, me to want to do this is when I was in college, I lived and studied in Rome for 3 months.
Okay.
In Italy. And when I was there, it was mostly media school. I was working to become a journalist at the time. And there was some cooking involved too. And we learned to make pizza at one point. And I think for one stretch of time when I was there, I ate pizza for more than 60 days straight every day.
Wow. Okay.
So,
I mean, and it was amazing pizza.
Yeah, trying different places. Because you can be walking down the street and that's the street food. Like here you get a taco for cheap, whatever. You walk down the street, you can get a little, in Rome, what they do is they have the long rectangular pizzas,
mm-hmm.
different kinds in the window. And you tell them how much of it you want to cut off, and then they just give it to you.
Oh, wow.
So you give
they charge you by centimeter or what?
They weigh it. So they cut it, put it on there, and it's cheap, you know.
Yeah.
That's
interesting.
Yeah, so we would always do that. It's the easy, cheap way to have lunch. And after I got back, I think I started messing around just in at home in the kitchen making pizzas, and they got better and better over the years. And then... when I was working as a journalist, I used to do these pizza parties, and some of the reporters I worked with would come over, and some of them also made pizza, which is kind of funny.
Okay.
So I think all of those things building up to this doctor.
So, pizza. But the oven that you have in Dr. Pizza, it's a stone oven, no? It's a brick oven, or what it is?
Yeah, it's clay.
So you have that one in your house? Okay.
No,
so
when you're at home, what you can do is get a pizza stone, which is kind of just like a piece of clay. It's like a ceramic, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And you put it in there and turn on your oven as hot as you can for an hour if you can. But, you know, maybe that's too much time, 30 minutes. Get it as hot as you possibly can.
Okay.
And, that's the closest you can get.
Have you noticed that people here in Mexico don't use the oven that much?
I have noticed it.
Do you open and it's usually a storage room?
No, that's for me too. I don't. Other than pizza, I don't use the oven at home. I pretty much just cook on the stovetop.
Yeah. Okay.
But so we have this clay oven. There's a company in Mexico that makes them. They're really nice. And the reason why you have the clay, they're thick walls. And... That insulates the heat. So you have this fire going, and it's, you know, you got to turn it on an hour or 2 hours before you open because you're building the heat up, and it's all conserving. And right now we normally are cooking around 400 degrees Celsius, which is like, I think around 850-900 Fahrenheit.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that is like in minutes, no?
Yeah, and that's like two or three minutes mostly.
Oh, wow.
Pizza.
So you have to take advantage of that oven and you cook other things there, no?
Not really. No. I mean, we do some like prep for things. Meatballs we do cook in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
We do a roasted cauliflower that we cook in the oven.
Yeah.
The thing is, that's the only source of heat we have in the restaurant.
Oh, really?
We don't have a stove. We don't have induction burners.
Okay.
We only have the oven. So if it's cooked, it's being cooked in the oven. If not, it's, you know, we have some salads and things like that. But.
Oh, wow. So you open also your other location, no? Like the place to go or just to pre-bake or what is that place?
So we have what's called the lab, Dr. Pizza Lab. It's right around the corner. And because it's Dr. Pizza's pretty small, it's only about 38 seats, so the kitchen's tiny, everything's tiny. So we have this small little kitchen space around the corner that we do all the production there. We make the dough there. We have huge refrigerators where, you know, we're storing because it's 48 hours of fermentation. We have more, you know, usually more than 2 days worth of dough stacked up, which is you know, hundreds of dough at any time in there. All the prep goes in there, and also for delivery and takeout, we have another oven in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you feel like coming from the US, from a city where there's a lot of Mexicans, to be part of the food cartel here in Mexico City? What was that, intimidating, or how did you feel before opening Dr. Pizza here?
I think I was definitely nervous. I'm not gonna lie.
Okay.
I think mostly because you don't know how it's just different. I don't know what
The politics,
the licensing, the, you know, hiring employees. I've never worked in a restaurant in Mexico before, so I don't know if the systems, the way people do things are different.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different, but it's you know, very similar in I was nervous. I was definitely nervous, and I think it's a weird feeling of kind of being a new person in the restaurant scene.
Yeah.
You know, with restaurants in cities like in Chicago, there's a scene. It's these restaurants all hang out and they do this. And I think being here, I realized it's very similar. You know, a lot of the chefs and people who work in bars and restaurants, they support each other. So, you know, they like to go to each other's restaurants. They like to go get coffee.
You feel that it's the same here.
Yeah, it's almost the exact same thing here, which I think is really cool. We always have people coming from other restaurants. And then, you know, someone says, oh, where should I go get, I don't know, where's a good place to get a drink? Oh, well, you send them to your friend's place. And that culture is really strong here, which I didn't know, you know, before opening.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
I think that's been really cool. And I think the support of all the other restaurants supporting us, me, some random new guy who just moved here.
Yeah.
I think it's helpful that, you know, my partner is Ricardo. He has other restaurants here. And
certainly that was helpful, no? To have a business partner that it's in the restaurant industry here.
100%. I think it would be impossible otherwise. because, you know, how do you go about everything and anything you can think of that goes into the back side of opening a restaurant? So he's really experienced. He knows everyone and all the right people. You know, when we're looking for, you know, where are we gonna get pepperoni? Which is funny, that was a huge problem. We could not find pepperoni anywhere. Couldn't find good pepperoni. Went to butchers. We went to
everything. So the one that you find in the Walmarts and in the Costco's, the Sam's Club, it's what? Is it not good? Or?
I would say it's not on the same level.
I don't even eat cured meats a lot, so I don't have any idea.
I think it's on it's not on the same level as the other things we're doing with the tomatoes, with the flour. It's like we're gonna really put a Sam's Club pepperoni on. So thankfully,
so then you made your own pepperoni.
We didn't make it, but a butcher shop, a charcuterie shop, whatever you want to call it, they made a custom one for us. Hermano is the name of these guys. They do really amazing stuff, and they had never done a pepperoni. Maybe they had done one before, but it wasn't on their list of products. So we had them come in, tasted some of their other things, and we wanted them to eat the pizza. We wanted them to try everything, and experts.
Yeah.
What do you think? Try something out.
And
with pepperoni, it takes it's a long time to make. You know, it has to hang and cure and do these things. So. They worked on some samples, and then we came to a recipe that we liked, and so that was a funny situation. Unexpected,
but I imagine that for other things will be easier, like the cheese. No, you can get mozzarella style of cheese anywhere in Mexico City.
There's the thing is outside of the pepperoni, you can get anything, and the products are amazing, and I think that's why the pizza's good. The salads are really good. They're really fresh because the products you can get in the markets here are incredible because the growing seasons in Mexico. And
that's good.
Yeah.
You find that there is good food scene in Mexico City?
I think amazing food scene. Something that I really like about the food scene here is that it's, I guess the word is going to be more inclusive. You don't have to be rich to go eat in a restaurant for lunch.
Okay.
In the States, I really feel like if you want to go out for lunch, like, it's going to be expensive no matter where you go. Here, I feel like there's something for everyone. You know, you can get tacos on the street.
Uh-huh.
You can get a torta. You can go into a fonda. Like,
interesting.
I think that's something that is really nice.
Uh-huh.
Instead of...
you know, something on my tours, now that you mentioned this, I have heard of clients... I don't know if you know this, but in Mexico, there is like this really old saying that you measure how rich is a town according to how many parties they have, no, per year. No, so if in a year they have 12 parties, well, it's wealthy. No, if they have one, it's a big one, but it's only one party. No, So I remember that many times clients, they have told me, oh yeah, we go out to dinner like 3-4 times. It's like if that was the measure
correct.
Of the, no, of, well, we are good, no, so we can go out.
That's crazy you say that. I mean, I think that's what I'm trying to talk about, but mm-hmm. when you, I never really thought of it, but when you say it, it reminds me immediately, like people do, oh yeah, like it almost tells you like what kind of job
yeah.
you have. It's like a sneaky way to say it. Like, yeah, we go out a few times a week.
Yeah.
We go out to eat 3-4 times a week. Like, oh, so you must be doing pretty good.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Interesting. All right. So I have heard that you have a mezcal problem, no? That you like a lot mezcal and it's okay. It's okay. I will not judge.
No, I don't have a problem, but...
You have a solution.
I've been sucked into the world of mezcal, that's for sure.
Okay.
So my other restaurant in Chicago, name was Quixote, we had a mezcal bar underneath the main restaurant.
Like a speakeasy?
Like a speakeasy, yeah. There was a separate entrance. It was super cool. And the bar manager down there that we brought on, his name is Jay Schrader. He used to be the beverage director for Rick Bayless for a number mm-hmm. of years, and that's how we met, weirdly
yeah.
enough.
yeah, actually.
And we took him on, and he's an expert. He's one of the leading experts in the United States. There's no doubt this guy has an encyclopedia, I don't know the word, an incredible knowledge of mezcal. You know,
uh-huh.
you sit with him, and he'll almost go into your brain and say, okay, over here you're going to be tasting a little bit of, you know, pine and a little bit of salt.
Oh.
And it's just an amazing person to uh-huh. learn from.
Yeah.
And through that process, about a year and a half ago, Jay came to me and my girlfriend Polly, who's the illustrator, and said, hey, you know, I've been working on this mezcal book for, I think, 3 or 4 years. He's been writing this book.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, he had been approached by a few publishing houses, and they wanted to bring the book on, but they wanted to have recipes for cocktails and this and that. And he's more of a purist guy, and he didn't
yeah.
want that. He, you know, mezcal shouldn't be in a
yeah.
cocktail type thought here.
Straight.
Yeah. So he said to us, you know, can Polly do the illustrations? I want to have, you know, 80 illustrations in there. I don't want to have photos. I want it to be like this very serious book, all hand-drawn illustrations.
Oh, wow.
So we had those conversations, and then in the process, you know, I was working as a journalist also at this time, and I said to him, you know, why don't we do this thing together? We've been wanting to, you know, get into the book world, Polly and I, and I think this would be a great project for all of us to do together.
Uh-huh.
So I was the editor on the book, Polly illustrated the book, and then we did the design, we did the printing, we did everything. So that kind of launched this little publishing company that we started. But the book itself is kind of unlike anything out there.
Okay.
It's, I don't want to say the Bible of mezcal,
uh-huh.
but something in that vein. It goes into the history, it goes into the science of the plant,
mm-hmm.
Goes into distillation, it goes into the economy of mezcal, you know, where's the money going, how does this work, because you
yeah.
have a lot of these big companies, and
yeah.
then you have distributors, and you have importers, and you have the mezcalero, and
yeah.
it's very complicated, and especially now that a lot of these big companies like George Clooney and Casamigos, they're...
Yeah. Also, the guy from Breaking Bad?
Yeah, the guy from Breaking Bad, they have their new mezcal coming
That's
out.
Crazy.
What is the name? Dos Hombres.
Dos, something like that.
Yeah.
Because it's him and, well, Jesse and the other guy.
Yeah.
Walter White, yeah. I don't know the names.
Yeah, so you have all these things happening, and I think the book is kind of like, in his mind, he wanted to just put this information in one place.
Okay.
All of it in one place, and so we did that, and it's been a huge hit. A lot of people in the industry, a lot of not only the mezcal industry, restaurants, because in the States right now mezcal is blowing up
yeah.
to such an extent where if you go to, you know, say Blackbird in Chicago, Alinea, these super fine dining restaurants,
mm-hmm.
and you have the, you know, their wine list, and their, maybe they have a few cocktails,
yeah,
they all have mezcal now, and that's
yeah.
a pretty new thing, you know, these super high-end mezcals, and if you don't have it, then, you know, you're missing out or something.
Yeah.
So that's pretty crazy to see.
And have you had the chance here to travel in Mexico to like mezcal places?
I have been to Oaxaca a few times, and that was when I was still running Quixote. So a lot of the producers that we were buying mezcal from and working with were, you know, nice enough to take us out to their palenques and spend, you know, a day with them making mezcal, learning the process, tasting, you know, right out of the still.
And I'm sure that in one of those trips it has been the best mezcal that you have ever tried.
Yeah, oh my God, easily. Yeah. I mean, you're literally taking it out. It's still hot.
Yeah.
And, you know, in
from the distillery process.
It's crazy. You know, super, super high proof mezcal. And it's really a like, almost magical experience to be there. And it's so crazy because it's one person making the whole batch, every part of it, from, you know, harvesting the agaves, roasting the agave, crushing, distilling. It's just one person.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any other spirit out there that
has that.
And then when you go and you actually see the person and you're like, this is just wild.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's really a special thing.
So with that book, you started your publishing brand?
Yeah.
It has a name?
The name is Prensa Press.
What is that?
Prensa Press. So it's kind of like a play on both languages.
Okay.
So,
well, speaking of both languages, let's test how is your Spanish, Paul.
Let's do it.
All right. So, well, have you studied Spanish or just by kissing on your girlfriend overseas, you have been better?
I never studied Spanish until about two and a half years ago.
Mm-hmm.
In high school, for some reason, someone convinced me that it was a good idea to take Latin and not take Spanish.
Uh-huh.
A language that you don't even speak, you just write it.
Yeah.
So then after I met Polly, I figured, you know, okay, well, time is now.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I took a few classes in Chicago at UNAM, which is the main university here in Mexico. Mm-hmm. They have a little satellite school in Chicago. So that was really,
really?
Cool. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And there's a lot of cultural components to it too, and they have the, you know, the ambassador would come in or the consulate, and they would have their events there. And
interesting.
And if you're a student, they want you to hang out and, you know, meet these people. So that was really cool. And then since I've been here, it's gotten a lot better, and I'm taking class at La Salle also. Mm-hmm. And
everyone goes there. I have heard lately that
The class, they're not that expensive. They're pretty good, and I do Duolingo. I do podcasts, I watch TV, I'm trying to do whatever I can do to flood my slow learning brain.
Alright, so let's test how it is. This tiny section is called ¿Cómo está tu español?
Okay.
Basically, it's three questions that I'm going to make you, and I'm going to measure it by, first, how do you understand it? And second, you have to answer in the same level of Spanish, you know? So it's really basic, then medium, and then hardcore. All right?
Okay.
So, let's start with something really simple. ¿Dónde estamos, Paul?
Estamos en mi oficina arriba de Parker and Lennox in Colonia, Juarez.
Okay, yeah, it has a great view, by the way. You should open a speakeasy here. It's beautiful, the
exactly.
Rooftop. That's good. All right, then number two. ¿Cuál era tu juego favorito de niño?
Cuando era niño, mi juego favorito era probablemente es un deporte, pero es ice hockey. ¿Cómo se dice en español?
Hockey sobre hielo.
Ah, okay, mm-hmm.
Sobre hielo. Ajá. Okay. Yeah, hockey. Well,
sí.
We don't have that here.
No, sí.
Well, yeah, in the there's a few shopping malls that they have.
Sí, sí, sí. Es raro, ¿no?
Sí. ¿Has ido a jugarlo?
Sí. Vamos a ver.
All right. So, la última, esta ya es con mucho slang chilango.
Okay, okay.
Ni siquiera mexicano, sino chilango, porque estamos en la Ciudad de México. Paul, al Chile, cuéntame qué ha sido lo más ñero que te ha pasado en la CDMX.
Ubesh, mi amigo. No entendí.
All right. I'm going to say it again. Paul, pélame. Al Chile, ¿qué ha sido lo más ñero que te ha pasado en la Ciudad de México?
Al Chile, ¿qué? Mande.
All right, I'm going to translate it for you. First, I say, Pelame, no, which is a slang. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
No, pelame means like literally, like peel me off.
Okay, okay.
But the what it means, it's, hey, hear me, listen to me.
Okay, okay. No?
Al chile, have you heard of that expression?
Chile.
Ajá, al chile.
No.
No? Al chile, well, obviously it talks about the chiles. And it means, give me the truth, no bullshit.
Okay.
All right? And ñero, have you heard of that?
No.
Ñero means like, I don't know if it's like bougie, like what is the most, for example, something ñero will be like, you're walking in the street and then you see someone spitting in the floor, mm-hmm. No, like that's disgusting, no? Or like throwing garbage, like something that someone with zero education will do, no? To you, or maybe even something kind of a bad, no? That someone pickpocketed mm-hmm. you. So ñero, it's like that, like, that's that.
Okay.
So now that I'm translated for you, does that, something has happened to you, something like that you have seen, something?
Probablemente las personas en los coches,
uh-huh.
las calles.
Okay.
Cuando estoy en bici.
Yeah, because you use the bike a lot.
I always use the bike, and I think the biking here is pretty good. There are a lot of bike lanes,
yeah.
A lot of people ride the bikes, but cars will turn right in front of you.
Yeah, sure. So, they don't give a shit.
No, they're going to turn.
They don't even put the lights.
Nope, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Usually, like, you're looking for the light.
Yeah.
Now I assume, like, he's going to turn, she's going to turn.
Yeah.
If they don't, you know.
Yeah. So the biking culture could improve here.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good, though.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on Sundays when they close down Reforma and all the streets. And
yeah.
It's amazing. I think even that's my favorite part of the city. I do not go out on Saturday nights usually because I want to get up Sunday, get out on the bike,
yeah.
enjoy it.
Yeah.
And there's thousands of people who do it. So
sure.
It's pretty good bike culture.
So if somebody who's listened who wants to come to bike, better on Sundays.
Come on Sunday. But if you're going down Reforma, there's good bike lanes and you can do pretty good.
Okay.
I haven't... Maybe I had like one scare, one bad scare.
Okay, but nothing happened.
No, nothing happened.
That's good. So do you think that... I lost my train of thought. So we talk about the pizza. We talk about your book. It's not sold here, right?
No, right now the book is being sold only in the States, but we are working on... a translated version.
Uh-huh.
There's a few stores here in the city who we've talked to who are very interested in selling it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine I hope by this fall that we'll have a translated version, and we're talking about doing a sort of release party and an event for it. So
oh yeah, usual.
I'll definitely let you know.
A lot of mezcal.
Yeah, we'll have some mezcal. I think Jay wants to come down and. That's the plan. So we have a few people in mind who are gonna help with the translation and gotta fire up
mm-hmm. okay.
nice printing and yeah. I hopefully this fall at the latest by winter.
That's good. So well, in your own life experience, would you recommend to people to come to Mexico, start a restaurant, to start something, a project that you have? Do you think it's a good opportunity? Has market?
I think there really is a good opportunity. I didn't come here with that in mind to do
yeah.
it. It was something that I would had maybe in the back of my mind as a possibility, but that wasn't the main reason why I moved. But now that I'm here, I see there is a lot of opportunity to be an entrepreneur, to kind of do independent projects.
Mm-hmm.
I've been really surprised by the people that I've met in the year that I've been living here, such as yourself. You know, you have your own company.
Thanks.
You have the podcast, you do all of these different things. And there's a lot of other people that I've met,
mm-hmm.
you know, not doing the same thing as you, but
yeah.
this group of friends that I've been introduced to, and people all seem to be doing their own little projects, whether it's on the side or even if it's their full time. You know, I have a good friend who has a video production studio. Another
uh-huh.
friend has you know, a design studio. Someone has a fashion brand, a music promoter.
Oh, wow.
So all of these different people,
uh-huh. And they are Mexicans, or they are foreigners also, a little bit of a mix?
These are all Mexicans, but I know there's a lot of foreigners too who are, are...
Like other ones in the food business, have you met many? Or?
Well, I know the guys at Cicatriz, they're from New York, a few of them. I know some of the partners are Mexican also. So those guys are, you know, doing their thing over there. That's a really successful project. I'm trying to think of any other... restaurants or things like that. I don't know. I think there's a something in the general air here of entrepreneurship. And you even see it in the informal economy of Mexicans. You know, they have their own little, whether it's, you know, a taquero, people selling things, or it's a, I think, a lot of opportunity to do your own thing.
Awesome. So, well, if anyone wants to go to Dr. Pizza, where they can find you, what social media do you use, or just Googling, it's super easy.
You can Google it, Google Dr. Pizza Mexico. We do have a website, drpizza.me. And we're most active on Instagram, so if you search Dr. Pizza on there, you're going to see most of our updates and things coming through there. I think that's kind of the way that... the world has gone, especially for restaurants. I feel like everyone likes to see
the menu, the
pictures, the specials, you know,
people having fun there.
Exactly. It gives you a better idea of what it's really like instead of some blank website with a few pictures. So that's your best bet if you want to check it out. And we're open 7 days a week now. We just expanded to open on Mondays too. And it's cool. Come on in if you're visiting from out of town. It's really a mix of people who come in, which is cool. A lot of people who work in the, you know, the business district here come in with their group for lunch, and then at night we have you know, some younger people who are partying, whatever. We have some tourists come in, and it's cool to see.
That's great. So, well, even if you are there, they can speak English or Spanish.
Yeah,
whatever
you want.
Very good level, by the way. Yeah. The slang is hard.
The slang was hard. I mean, like I knew the words, but I didn't know. They didn't make sense together.
Yeah, you understood. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you have to live here, I think.
I slowly pick it up. I'm like, half the time I go to a party or something, I'm like, I really, there's so much slang in the city. It's crazy.
And you know also where there's a lot of slang? In the food industry.
Yeah.
In the food industry, we are like, it's always, they will mess around with you. No, if you are a cook, a chef, they will always be messing around.
Oh, I think that the whole world is.
Yeah,
that's
true.
You go into a kitchen, that's crazy. But the thing is, here I think a lot of words have two completely different meanings.
Yeah.
So you could be using one in the complete wrong way and people are just going to laugh at you. And that's okay.
Yeah, don't learn the Spanish in Spain. Don't learn the Spanish in Argentina. Sucks. We are the ones that speak more Spanish, you know, in the world. So we have the correct Spanish.
I like the Spanish here. It's very nice.
Yeah. Well, Paul, thanks so much for having me. And, let's go get some pizza.
Let's do it.
All right.
So I hope that you enjoyed the chat that Paul and I had. Also, another small commercial. I will have another Instagram live comedy show, but I don't know right now the details, so follow me on my Instagram or Twitter or Facebook as @ubijaren. The link is in the description. And also remember to follow my playlist on the Spotify, also in the description. And then when we can travel again, check also the website, that it's also in the description. So if you are in Mexico City, take one of my tours. Remember to stay safe, stay healthy, and I will see you till the next episode next week. See ya.